The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. Steve Nichol and Sebastian Salazar with you in the studio. Stevie, major transfer rumor to discuss later in the show. Cristiano Ronaldo could be returning to Real Madrid, but we'll leave that for later. Let's welcome in Craig Burley, Julian Laurent, and Ale Moreno. Guys, plenty of World Cup qualifiers to discuss. Let's start with the pick of the day from Wednesday in Group G. Turkey, a 4-2 victory over the Netherlands. Burak Yilmaz with a hat-trick. Calhanoglu scored as well. Davy Klaassen and Luke de Jong, the goal scorers for the Dutch. Memphis Depay missing a penalty late. Steve, this was a crazy game. Did you come out more impressed with Turkey or disappointed in the Dutch?
Oh, definitely disappointed in the Dutch. Mm. Listen, the Turks had, what, four shots and four goals? Something crazy like that. So clearly their game plan was to keep tight and try and catch the Dutch on the break. And so for them, it was the perfect game. For the Dutch, you know, yes, they scored two goals away from home. Yes, they got a penalty. But all of these things were when it was too late. Mm. And with the amount of possession the Dutch had with the ball, particularly in the attacking third, they did absolutely nothing with it. So going forward, in some respects, they were pretty blunt. But clearly, we used four goals. You got problems at the back.
Ale, pre-pandemic, I feel like we were talking about the Dutch as a, you know, potential favorite, dark horse at least, for the Euros. Things have certainly changed under Frank de Boer.
And you just mentioned the name that changed it all, Frank de Boer. He gets a hold of this national team and it's, oh my goodness, this team is going to possess the ball to death. They're going to pass the ball sideways and back. But when it comes to being efficient in the attack, well, they're ineffective. This is a team that in the first half, yeah, they had all the possession in the world, but did nothing with it, as Stevie just alluded to it. And then defensively, not enough transition, not enough work in 1v1 situations. Almost surprised that the Turkish team was actually getting after them and attacking them when there were opportunities to do so. This team has all sorts of flaws, but I think the biggest flaw comes from the top. Frank de Boer, I just have to say, I have no idea how he got his hands on this national team job. And to me, it looks like a guy who doesn't quite match the personnel that he has available to him on the field. This team is all over the place.
Jules, 3 months until the Euros. Any chance he could be dismissed before that? I saw a lot of negative reaction from Dutch fans during this match.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I hope so for Dutch fans, for those players, because basically he's driving a Ferrari, but he doesn't have his driving license. This is the way I see it. It's 2 wins in 7 now. How can you play so badly with such a talented squad? And of course, it's not a perfect squad, but it's a very good squad, much better than anything he's done with it so far. And I agree with what the boys have said. It was so disappointing tonight. I thought the team selection was wrong from the beginning. I thought the formation was wrong from the beginning. And I just hope that either he or someone else can turn things around, because Koeman had started something really interesting and now he's almost ruined it all already.
Yeah, you see it on the graphic. 2 wins in 7 matches for the Dutch. Turkey and Netherlands in Group G then, where they're also alongside Norway, who faced Gibraltar on Wednesday. Norway won 3-0. A little bit of bad news. Odegaard left the game injured. Could be a concern for Arsenal. Erling Haaland didn't score. He did start. But speaking of Haaland, some interesting comments about the 20-year-old from Borussia Dortmund's technical advisor, Matthias Sammer. Here's what he had to say. Quote, I would recommend for Erling to see the value of Borussia Dortmund. The club has given him a lot. From here, he can only go to a handful of clubs. When Erling makes the next step, he must be the finished product, perfect. Craig, is Dortmund trying to send a message here to Erling Haaland? And is this the message you'd be sending to your best player?
Well, I think Matty Sammer's just saying, look, this is a great platform for this young man, and he is still learning the game, and that's a worry for those out there, and he can still get better. Look, it would have been a bigger surprise if Sammer had said, oh, the kids have finished the article, you know, he's the done deal, because that's just going to blow his head up. So he's saying, look, we give kids a platform here, we give youngsters a platform, we teach them the right way, we hope to have success along the way, and when the time comes, you know, we're not going to stand in his way to make that next big move. And look, Dortmund might not have to worry about that in the summer, because they're only going to sell this guy for absolute top dollar. And with the pandemic and the budget cuts around the globe, I would be surprised at this moment in time if somebody was been able to come up with the cash in the door to buy this guy, because he's arguably the hottest property in world football. So I think it's quite clever in just saying, look, you know, we understand, you know, every Tom, Dick and Harry is looking at you and wants you, but you're actually at a decent place and you're still on a learning curve. And he seems a very level-headed young man to me, and he's well advised by his father and others. So I think Dortmund are just hoping they're going to be able to keep him for at least another year or two and then cash in on a huge money move. We'll see.
Jules, do you feel like this is an indication that he's agitated, ready to move?
I think so. It looks to me like this. Why is much as Summer saying that this time if there was not something behind it? I have to say I disagree with it. Since when do you have to be the finished product to move to a bigger club because you feel, and I think a lot of us feel, that he's already too good for Borussia Dortmund anyway? We saw his frustration after the games against Cologne on Saturday, where he was clearly quite angry that the rest of the team was clearly not at his level. He scored two goals, but yet they still could not win. And Sammer, in the same interview, takes the example of Robert Lewandowski, saying, look, he waited and he left at the right time for Bayern Munich, albeit on a free, but he was ready and went straight. Okay, but that was when he was 25. Erling Haaland is not going to wait 5 years. He's ready now. Lewandowski was not ready at 20 to make the step from Borussia Dortmund, where he wasn't, by the way, to a club like Bayern Munich. I think Haaland is ready now. And he said also about Dembele. Oh, but Ousmane Dembele went to Barcelona. Maybe that was too early. He was not ready. You can't compare Ousmane Dembele and how immature he was, and probably still is, compared to how mature Erling Haaland is, way younger than what Dembele was when he left the club. So, listen, Haaland is already ready for much bigger things than Borussia Dortmund. I hope for them that he stays, but I wouldn't be surprised if he decided to leave now, especially if they don't qualify for the Champions League.
Ale, what about the basic premise here, that he's not a finished product? Do you agree with it? Like, where is the room for growth in his game?
Well, the fact that he's as young as he is, and so there is an element of experience that is still out there for Erling Haaland. And that's the scary part, and that's a scary thought for everybody else that plays against this guy, is that he's only going to get better. And the ceiling continues to be higher and higher than everybody else around him. And because the ceiling is higher than everybody else around him, then it's only a matter of time until he moves. Now, if I'm Borussia Dortmund, I stop talking about Haaland as not a finished product or go down the path that Matthias Sammer was going down. And I simply make it about dollars and cents for him. And I say to him, look, the market right now is not realistic. The market right now has been affected by a pandemic, as Craig just alluded to it. So how about if you're making a decision based upon what's best for you financially, you wait. You wait. You wait until the market becomes what it needs to be, so that then the suitors that are out there are putting their best foot forward and their best bid forward, and that there are many suitors so that they compete for you and your services. I make it about dollars and cents. I make it about a logical decision, and I say to him, regardless of whether you're the finished product or not, we know you're going to go, but you can maximize your value if you stay with us for another year.
These quotes almost suggest that he's like not ready to move. Is there any truth to that for you?
I would think the fact that he decided to go to Borussia Dortmund when he did tells you that he didn't think he was ready for the very, very, very top. Mm-hmm. And if he's thinking along those lines and goes when he thinks in his head, regardless of how good we think he is,
right,
it's what's going on in his head. And if he feels as though he can tomorrow step in to the biggest and the best.
Do you have any doubts that he believes that when you watch him play, when you see the reaction to the Dortmund team?
Well, you have
that we
to ask the
about?
Question of why did he go to Borussia Dortmund such a short period ago? If he was that up on himself, he would have gone straight to the very best side. But he chose not to because he must have felt that he wasn't ready for that decision.
Haven't we praised him for that decision?
Right, how long ago was it? It was 2 minutes ago. So all of a sudden he's ready. It's important what's going on in his head. Yes, he's going to be frustrated right now because things are not going great with Dortmund. Mm-hmm. Not him personally. But if he looks at the big picture, then if he's not ready in his own head, then it's pointless going anywhere.
Right. Well, listen, Sebi. Let's get one thing right. Erling Haaland didn't go to Dortmund to be this trophy-laden player, right? He went to Dortmund to learn and to progress and to get better, because he's not stupid, and his advisors are not stupid. You've only got to look at the domestic title in Germany and see where it's been going for the last umpteen years. You've only got to look at the record in recent years in the Champions League. So it wasn't about going in there and overturning Bayern Munich. Listen, if that happened, then great. But this was more about a learning curve. Now, look, is he ready to make a move? Of course he is. He's good enough to make a move. But the bottom line is here, who has the cash in this day and age with the budgetary restrictions that the pandemic has caused for all the elite clubs, not just small clubs, but the elite clubs, who has the money to say to Dortmund, OK, how much do you want for the hottest talent in world football at the moment in this position? And I think from Dortmund's perspective, they're absolutely right to say, look, you know, we're happy for you to go at some point because that's what we do as a club. But one, we've given you the platform, so we want top dollar. And maybe it's worth waiting another 12 or 18 months or whatever it is. And I think, as Stevie said, he was well advised in going there in the first place and not taking the big jump. And I think he'll be well advised in his decision. I don't think he'll be thinking too much about what Matthias Sammer is saying and thinking more about what he's doing on the field and the trajectory that he's on, which, by the way, is a very, very good one.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Plenty more content over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel, where you can join the almost 900,000 subscribers. Plenty of bonus content over there.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Turkey, Netherlands, the match of the day on Wednesday. Portugal, Azerbaijan, very much not. A 37th minute own goal, the only strike in this one. Portugal does come away with the 3 points, drawing the short straws and having to watch this one for us here on ESPN FC. Ale Moreno, let me apologize to you, Ale. What did you take away from this game?
You know, Seth, for the most part and most days, I'm very blessed and very fortunate to have the job that I do have, to talk about the game, to watch games, and be able to analyze those games. Today was not one of those days. Watching this game was hard work. Hard work. To watch Portugal today and just watch the only goal that they score and how incredibly frustrating they were in the final third. Inability to create chances. It was mostly long distance shots and crosses into the box that were headed out by the center backs from Azerbaijan. And as frustrated as I was, well, it was Cristiano Ronaldo who was even more frustrated. Hands up in the air, yelling at people, pointing into spaces. He wasn't very good. Turnover after turnover, free kick into the wall after free kick into the wall. It was just a forgettable game for Portugal. However, I suppose as compared to the Dutch, they'll take it. They have 3 points. The Dutch don't. It was, again, one of those matches that I will not get those 2 hours of my life back.
Portugal in Group A, as are Serbia and Ireland. They played on Wednesday as well. Serbia 3-2 winners there in Belgrade. You mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo. Reports out of Marca this week that he is decided already. He will leave Juventus. Now just a question of if they can work out a deal back to Real Madrid. Supposedly wants to return to the Spanish capital. Jules, I'll start with you. It's not the first that we've heard this rumor, but it's probably the loudest. Why now and how realistic is it?
Why now? Because obviously we getting towards the end of the season, and that's where if you want to move a player, if you're an agent or if you're a player himself, that's where you start moving your you know, your position on your chessboards, really. That's what happens. We know exactly how things like this come out, who briefs who. And this is clearly another example of the Cristiano Ronaldo entourage people, Jorge Mendes people, who are starting to make some noise. Juventus and Fabio Paratici, the sporting director, have said already he will be there next season. He's not going anywhere. He's got 1 year left on his contract in Turin. So he will be there. One, we're not sure Paratici himself will still be there in the summer because his contract runs out too. So someone new might come in and they might decide to sell Ronaldo. Secondly, what happens if Juve don't qualify for the Champions League, which is possible, seeing how much they're struggling in the league. If there's no Champions League, there's nowhere Cristiano can stay and play Europa League football. Nowhere in a million years. So there's still a lot of things that can happen between now and the end of the season. But from Real Madrid's point of view, would it really be wise to bring him back when you need to clearly rebuild your squad? You already have aging players in your squad, and this is the time to go and try to get Mbappe or Erling Haaland or people like that, not to get a 36-year-old big Cristiano Ronaldo. So there's a lot of conditions, but hey, in football, we've seen worse than that.
Craig, of course, Juventus spent $100 million on Ronaldo when he was 33 years old. The whole point was to win Champions League. Obviously, it hasn't happened. Are we at the point yet? And now with these rumors flying everywhere, where we can finally label this a bust?
Well, look, Juventus were already dominant in Italy before he went there, and that continued certainly for up until this season. So in terms of winning a couple of titles, then he's done that. But listen, we all know, and you've talked about it, that that's not why they brought him in. But when you bring somebody in, you can't just bring him in and say, OK, we have Ronaldo now. He's in his 30s. He's not in, you know, he's not the 25, 26 year old anymore. And we're just going to let him get on with it. And we're not going to bring in the quality player that he needs around about him if we are going to win the Champions League. And so they didn't bring in the right calibre player. And hence the results. Yes, he scored goals in Italy, domestically, and quite a lot. But, you know, at the end of the day, they said, oh, he'll struggle to score here because, you know, the way they defend in Italy and all that. Well, they defend that well in Italy. All the teams got pumped out of the Champions League again. So, domestically, it's been okay. But, you know, if he goes back to Real Madrid or not, I don't know. But he's going to be 37 in February. And even from the perspective of going back to Real Madrid, I thought they were about the Galacticos and going and signing these big new young stars. And if this happens, it kind of smacks of desperation. And also, what do you do with him? Karim Benzema, the boys have touched on it over the last few days, has been playing particularly well. Can you fit a Ronaldo into your side through the middle who doesn't really want to run anymore with Karim Benzema? So I'm not sure the whole thing makes sense. But in terms of what Juventus expected from him and what he expected from Juventus, I don't think they've met the criteria.
Ale, what about the Real Madrid perspective? Wouldn't it be a no-brainer to bring a player like Cristiano Ronaldo back into the fold?
It would be a no-brainer to say no. Thank you. Appreciate it, Cristiano. We had a great time. We won a lot of things together. You've moved on, and we've moved on as well. Now, we haven't made the best decisions since you moved on, but that's on us. That has nothing to do with bringing you back. And we're not going to cover our mistakes with making yet another mistake. The Cristiano Ronaldo era in Real Madrid was great, but it's done with, and it's time for Real Madrid to look younger, to look into other players, to look into other names, and to transition forward to the next phase of their life as a club. And that might include Erling Haaland or Kylian Mbappe or what have you, but it should not include Cristiano Ronaldo.
I'm not hearing a lot of support for this so far here. Maybe we can get some from Sergio Ramos. He has some interesting quotes really a couple weeks ago now about Ronaldo. It basically comes down to this. During the divorce, both sides lost. It's kind of hard to argue that, isn't it, Stevie?
Are you looking for me to support Cristiano Ronaldo in this particular case? Listen, Ramos is his mate.
You agree with Ale? You think it'd be a mistake to bring him back?
100% mistake. Do you know what? So you think the future for Real Madrid next season is to have two guys up front whose combined age is nearly 70? Do you really think that's a good idea? You know, you go and spend money on the future.
Right.
Hazard, get him fit.
How about haven't won Champions League since he left.
How about you just get him fit? Well, why do you think Ronaldo
think that's
left?
Magically happen?
Why do you think Ronaldo left? Do you think Ronaldo left because he thought Real Madrid were going to win the Champions League the following season? No.
No.
Right, there you go. So why would he go back there now when they're in transition? And as I said, the future, you have to get Hazard fit. Vinicius is starting to look like the real thing, and you have to try and get Rodrigo on the right path. That's the future right now. Not two old guys whose combined age is nearly 70. Seriously.
Jules, the last word. You don't think a Ronaldo-Benzema partnership could work again?
No, I don't think it will happen anyway. I see why they're leaking that, but it won't happen. And I'm not even sure that if they were playing together, that they would be that good. So let's forget about it.
All right.
Slow news week.
And Jules mentioned it, no guarantees of Champions League football next year for Juventus. Here's a look at the Serie A table. Right now, they sit third.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Belgium 3-1 winners over Wales in World Cup qualifying in UEFA's Group E. Goal scorers for Belgium, Kevin De Bruyne, Thorgan Hazard, and Romelu Lukaku. Stevie, we were watching this one, a great start for Wales, but the difference in quality evident. That next 15, 20 minutes, you really saw Belgium just take over.
Yeah, there was two phases in the game where Wales actually looked like a team. Right at the start, where they scored that fantastic goal, and they had a little spell at the start of the second half as well. But the rest of the game, I mean, it was all about Belgium. And it was a matter of time before Belgium not took control, because they pretty much had control, but would start creating and scoring goals. And they got three, they probably should have had more, but in the end, after a sticky start, it really was a comfortable victory for Belgium.
The talk all week has been that Wales is Gareth Bale's priority. Did you see that in this match?
I saw the Gareth Bale that has been playing for Tottenham
really?
In this match.
Even in that first sequence, even in that goal?
Well, he made a great pass.
Yeah. Couple.
I mean, are we going to start clapping the guy for making one pass in a game?
I guess not.
He didn't particularly... I didn't see him busting a gut defensively that much. That probably wasn't his remit. But if you're going to play Belgium, then you're not going to see a lot of the ball. So I'll give him a pass, but just...
We saw Romelu Lukaku with one missed sitter there, but he did get the penalty to make it 3-1. Some interesting comments over the last couple of weeks from Lukaku talking about his fitness, his diet. Apparently he's lost 7 kilos since moving to Inter Milan, got rid of some pasta, and also took the pineapple off his pizza. This is real serious reporting here, Stevie. We have Frank LaBeouf, who's just joined the show. Frank, are you surprised that the diet here has made such a difference for Lukaku? Because he does look a different player than what we saw at Manchester United.
Yes, he's absolutely fantastic, and he seems to be in a very good shape. But I'm not sure it's because of the diet, especially if you are talking about the pineapple. I think pineapple is, you have some sugar, but you have 90% of water. I mean, I'm not a chef. I'm not a nutritionist, I would say. I know that it's a good taste, but I'm not sure it helps you to lose weight. I think maybe stopping eating pizzas is maybe a good solution, because of the flour and also the olive oil. But I don't think, putting out the pineapple out of the pizza will help you losing weight.
I thought Frank said he wasn't a chef. Sounds like it to me.
Yeah, and a nutritionist.
He knows what all the ingredients are, didn't he?
Yeah, I didn't know it was in pineapple. No. 80% water, did you
Thanks,
know
Frank. Thanks for that.
Ale.
Well, I made my researches, on internet, and I know that, there's nothing much to talk about the pineapple, except that it's a very good fruit, but that's it.
Ale, are we exaggerating here, or do you see like a physical difference between Lukaku at United and Lukaku at Inter?
There is. 7 kilos difference. And if this man had to lose 7 kilos to get himself into shape, you can only imagine what he was in the last few days at Manchester United and when he was rolling around with that extra weight. The thing is that Romelu Lukaku, when you see him play, part of his game is the physicality. But if you're carrying extra weight, that physicality now becomes hard to carry around and a little slower and difficult on the turn, and you can't take people in one-on-one situations. So it does become about muscling people around the whole time. Now that he's lost this weight, you see a guy that can run at people. Yes, his game's still about physicality. Yes, he can still turn people and push people around, but he has an element of speed also that he didn't quite have in the last few days at Manchester United, and now we know why.
Steve, of course, few diets compared to yours during your heyday. Hey, let me ask you this. It seems like Inter Milan diagnosed this pretty quickly. Shouldn't Manchester United have done something if it was that obvious?
At the end of the day, it's what suits you. You know, on a Friday before we left, sausage and mash, we would have it. I'd get to the hotel, wherever we were going, at 7 o'clock at night, I'd have fish and chips. I'd get in my bed and have a couple of bags of crisps and some Coke. But it suited me. It worked for me. It didn't affect me.
Did it work for you? You've said before privately you could have been a lot better.
See, but I didn't have that bad a career, did I?
No. But you've said you've said that you could have done more had you focused more on your diet. I'm not putting those words in your mouth, am
yes,
I?
Yeah. When did I say that?
You've always talked about how you never focused on that stuff.
I might have said, you know what? Maybe there was a little something if I hadn't. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That's what made me happy. That's what got me on the field and got me running around. And so maybe as a dietitian, you might look at that and go, what? But you know what? In between my ears, when I stepped on the field, I was happy as a clam.
Yeah.
That's part of the game. Being mentally ready.
Frank, what were you eating at Chelsea? Fish and chips?
No, I was... No, of course not. I mean, if he suited Stevie, it wouldn't have worked with me. I needed to take care of my body. I mean, if you want to be a Formula One, you wouldn't put, you know, bad gas in your car to make sure it's going to work properly. And sodas didn't work for me. Crisps didn't work for me. And neither also some fish and chips. So I would have gone for fish, for grilled fish, for meat, for pastas, and rice. That's it. And no sodas. Sodas is a poison. Water is good. Red wine is even better than soda. Much, much better than soda. You have to forbid sodas if you want to be an athlete.
Mm. All right, he says he's not a dietitian.
he's not a chef. He's not a dietitian. Right. He's no man.
Plenty more from Frank over on Extra Time. By the way, Frank is F1. So what does that make you, me, and Ale, Stevie?
Oh, we're the demolition derby.
Go-karts. Yeah.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
More World Cup qualifiers, this time out of UEFA's Group D, France hosting Ukraine.
Is that a big ball or a wee car?
I don't know. I hope it's a wee car.
It's a wee car, there you go.
Pretty impressive. Also impressive here, Antoine Griezmann, 19th minute, golazo.
Oh. Well, he's got so much time to pick his head up and pick his spot. But you talk about delivering, oh my goodness, inch perfect, keeper absolutely no chance. You just can't give a guy with this amount of quality that sort of time and space.
France would stay in the lead into the second half. Big deflection here off Kimpembe. 1-1.
I mean, what do you say? It's just the soccer gods sometimes are not with you. And that's about the only way I can describe that deflection off Kimpembe.
1-1 how it ends up. The reigning World Cup champions then forced to settle for a draw at the Stade de France. Not the ideal start for the defense of their title. Frank and Jules still with us for more perspective. Frank, how'd you rate the French performance?
Well, I was really looking forward to seeing that game because the last time they play against each other, France smashed Ukraine 7-1 some months ago. So I wanted to see, you know, how it will go that way that time. And it was an acceptable, you know, first half with that goal, even if I think Pavard before was just offside when he got the ball. But France had some chances, just should have scored more goals. And then the second half was simply horrendous. Nothing much. Sloppy, clumsy. Yeah, they weren't there. And conceded a stupid goal. Well, very strange goal, I would say. And at the end of the day, you cannot say much than, well, it's a normal draw. Even if you know that France is much, much better than Ukraine, it wasn't proven during that game. And they will have to do better. I'm not concerned. I'm not worried about the qualification of France in Qatar, seeing the group. But it's not a good start, that's for sure.
Jules, maybe you're not worried about the team qualifying, but are you worried about how they played on Wednesday?
Yeah, but I have to say it was very disappointing. I mean, this is what we do, though. Even when Frank was playing, we never used to start well the World Cup qualifiers. I don't know why. I don't know if psychologically it was always a slow burner and they started slowly. But even the great teams of Frank's era, or even this one who just won the World Cup, you you don't do it the first game. I don't know how you can explain that. But it was disappointing. I think the lack of creativity, the way they fell asleep in that second half, especially being 1-0 up, I thought was very, very disappointing and very strange. I didn't like Deschamps' substitution. I thought he should have kept Giroud until the end, because the more the game was going, the deeper and deeper the Ukrainians were playing. They were all in their box, and Giroud with crosses could have maybe headed the ball and scored or do something far more than Martial, who replaced him. Kylian Mbappe was on an off day, and Shevchenko after the game, the Ukrainian head coach, said that they had a plan, especially to mark him and to counter him, and we hardly saw him in that whole game until he came off. So not a good day for Mbappe and not a good day for France overall.
Frank, what do you make of what Jules says? How do you explain these slow starts for France?
Yeah, it's strange. It's true that we all knew that we all have known this kind of start. And, well, I don't know. It's maybe the players who, especially during that pandemic, where you're not really concerned about that kind of games where you know normally you should win. And, in fact, you score very quickly, let's say playing easily. And as I said, you get sloppy and, in a way, unprofessional, and you don't finish the job. And football is always getting you back if you don't do the job properly, and it's what happened. But it can happen. But again, I'm not worried. It's maybe better. Maybe French people we need a slap in the face, you know, to react. It's how we are made, because we feel too comfortable in our lives. That's what it is in football as well. And it's what happened tonight. They will react. Deschamps will make sure the next game they do the job. I completely agree with what Jules said. You know, substitution weren't the best substitution I ever seen. And the way they played, it wasn't the best game. And we didn't see some players. Mbappe, the first guy we didn't see.
Jules, it's a World Cup qualifier, but thinking about Euros this summer, are you at all worried about what you're seeing from the French team?
But that's the thing. I think this is for Deschamps especially and the players. This is because of how weird the season is. And don't forget, they also have the semi-final of the Nations League still to be played, you know, and the Euros. But this is very much already preparation for the Euros. So Deschamps played the team with most of the players who were there in 2018 and who won the World Cup, apart from Rabiot, but pretty much everybody else, whether they were starting or not, but everybody else was there. And I think already in their head, it was Euros mode. And he's got two more games now, Kazakhstan and then Bosnia in the next, 6 days to, you know, to keep that preparation. He will make changes. He will see there's players like Ndombele who play a lot, who play for their place at the Euros. This is very much the way it is. So I don't think they'd be worried, like Frank said. I mean, I heard what Deschamps said on French television after the game. He was disappointed, but he was not worried. No one was worried. They will qualify for the World Cup. There's no problem. There's no doubt. However, you're already preparing for the Euros. That's what you're thinking of. And maybe we could see a change of formation. Maybe we'll see different players in the next two games. But certainly Deschamps will be in that mode of trying things to make sure that they're ready for when the Euros come. Because after this is it. The next time you announce your squad, it will be for the Euros. So already, I think, in their mind, it's the Euros, not the World Cup.
France, Ukraine, then splitting points in Group D. Also in Group D, Finland, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Kazakhstan. Changing gears a little bit here, Jules, some reports out of Italy suggesting Napoli are getting ready for a fire sale. Koulibaly could be on the selling block. Where are some possible destinations where you think he could end up?
Yeah, I think Koulibaly will go this summer. He almost went last summer and the summer before and in the two last Januaries as well. So he turned 30 in June. He's still a wonderful defender. Maybe in the last 18 months, he hasn't been at the level that we saw him under Mauricio Sarri, for example, at the club where he was really one of the top three in the world. But he's still fantastic physically, but with the pace and with the ball as well. I think he's improved a lot working with Sarri especially. So there's clubs that will need centre-backs. We know that there might be a few musical chairs as well. If Rafael Varane leaves Real Madrid, for example, to go maybe somewhere in England, what are Manchester City doing? What are Manchester United doing? I think they both could do with centre-back, especially United. So there will be places and clubs, PSG as well, of course, maybe even other clubs in Italy. So I'm not worried at all. I think Kalidou Koulibaly will find a club at the level of his ambition and of his talent. And if you look, I think Napoli will probably ask between 40 and 50 million euros. And even in this current context, I think that's a very good price for him.
Frank, no doubt he'll be highly sought after. How do you rate Koulibaly?
Fantastic player, as Drew said. You know, it's difficult for him right now, but like it's difficult for every top player. We saw so many of them struggling this season because of the pandemic, because of the fact that you have no fans, that the pressure is different, you have to prepare differently. But at the end of the day, he's one of the top defenders I've ever seen. And I wish him to find the best club. The thing is about that, you know, if you don't have the musical chair, which club can be or can afford him and can be and which position can be available for him? And I definitely, if I calculate the economy and the sports side as well of it, I only see one club. It's Liverpool. It's Liverpool, and it's Stevie's former club, because every other positions are already taken by top players in every big clubs where Koulibaly could go. The only place right now is alongside Van Dijk for me. And I don't know if Stevie agrees with me. Otherwise, yeah, we'll have to wait for the musical chair. But otherwise, I don't see Koulibaly going elsewhere than Liverpool.
Koulibaly, Van Dijk, can you imagine, Stevie?
I can. I already am. And I'm 100% with Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, Liverpool are going to start next season, touch wood, with two centre-backs in Gomez and Van Dijk that have had major, major injuries. And in fact, this is Gomez's second major injury. So I think this is an absolute no-brainer for Liverpool. You go and you get Koulibaly because, well, they don't have anybody else anyway. Matip can't play two games in a trot. So it's an absolute no-brainer.
You were really high on Upamecano before. Does the age worry at all you with Koulibaly? He's 30.
No, well, Upamecano's gone, so there's no point in dwelling on that. And so after that, the next best guy available, no question, is Koulibaly. For all the reasons Frank said. He's big and strong, he can play, he's still got pace, he's a bull. I'll tell you what, you step on the field, you want to stand beside this guy.
Still with Napoli for now. Plenty more discussion on Napoli and the rest of Serie A on the latest edition of the Serie Awesome podcast. Hey, the big fella, Mark Donaldson, joining the crew this week for all the latest on Italian football.
Tired of of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, that's it for us here on ESPN FC. Thanks to Craig, Ale, Jules, and Frank. Time now for Extra Time. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Wednesday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. It's always back. Did I not do it last time or something?
No.
Were you disappointed? Did you write in your diary about
it?
Yes.
Yeah, you did that time, though.
I did. Stevie and I here in the studio. We got Jules and Frank with us as well. First question. Will Bale get playing time if he returns to Real Madrid? We watched him today. What do you think?
Are you kidding? There's a reason why he's at Spurs. Because they don't want him. So what possible reason
would
he get time?
Zidane could leave.
What has he done at Spurs to think that Zidane would get him back now till we get him on the field for us? I don't think so.
Jules, what do you think? Any future for Bale at a Zidane-less Madrid?
Well, I think it's unlikely, but like you said, if Zidane goes and it's a new manager, let's say someone like Allegri or someone else, Nagelsmann, I don't know, whoever they want to get, maybe he will find something in Bale that he likes and he might want to keep him, or at least give him a chance, maybe. But I agree with Stevie, it's pretty unlikely anyway that he's got a future at the club.
We saw Netherlands, of course, lose 4-2 today, 7 games under Frank de Boer. They've won just twice. Frank, have you ever had a manager that made you wonder how they got the job, like Frank de Boer?
Yeah, but I won't name names.
It's extra time. Nobody's watching.
Yeah, of course. I played in Marseille, and it's funny that I had, in 1 year, I had 4 coaches and 3 chairmen. In one season, and some of them you really wonder what they were doing there, and I was the captain of Marseille. I could have been the coach as well. It would have been much better, I think. But that's what it is.
Jules, you love to criticize Ronald Koeman. How good does he look now?
Ronald Koeman or Frank de Boer?
Ronald Koeman, who you like to criticize with Barcelona. Wow.
Much better, but I think when we criticised him, when I was very critical, I think he deserved it because he started so poorly. He got the tactics wrong, the system was wrong. He tried to change too many things and the wrong things at the time that he wanted to change them. But I'm glad he turned things around. I'm glad that what he's doing now is working. We can see the improvement collectively, individually. That's much better. I don't see that from Frank de Boer coming soon, anytime, anywhere. But for Koeman, and I'm very happy to say that now, he's much better than when he was at the beginning of the season. But I thought I was quite objective. When he was rubbish, we said it. And now that he's better, we say it as well.
On that topic, Jules, will Barcelona be able to win El Clásico, considering Real Madrid play Liverpool before they play Barcelona?
That's a big advantage, of course, for Barcelona not to still be in the Champions League, not to have to think or to have in the back of your mind somewhere, even if you don't want to, and if you try to block that Champions League quarterfinal first leg, it will be there even before Clásico. That's what people, we talk about it and we're 2 weeks ahead. So just imagine for the players, they know it will be there. And for Barca, that's a big advantage. I think they can definitely win the Clásico, and I think Zidane will have to find something tactically to counter the 3-5-2 or 3-4-3 that we've seen recently with Barcelona and Koeman. It might be for him to go back to 3 at the back as well, like he did against Atalanta, for example, and against Elche in the league. Maybe, but he will have to come up with something. Otherwise, I think Barca will have the upper hand.
Frank, can Chelsea shut down Manchester City in the FA Cup semi-final? What do you think?
I would love to, I have to say, to be frank. But it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard because
he's Frank
City
every day, isn't he?
For me, definitely the best team. He's definitely the best team in England right now, and they can win everything. I only see Bayern Munich maybe stopping them in the Champions League. So it's going to be a big task. But in one game, everything is possible, and it's a cup game. So you have to have the right mentality, the right day, in the right time. So, yeah, I believe they can do it.
Manchester United did it, what, like 3 weeks ago? Is there something Chelsea can take from that blueprint?
Don't make mistakes. That's it. That's it. Don't make mistakes. If everybody does the job, then you don't lose.
Right. You have a chance.
Exactly. Right. You make mistakes, then Man City will punish you. Mm.
Good either or here. Good either or. Stevie, George Best or Johan Cruyff?
Ooh.
I told you it was a good one.
My boots are still actually at my primary school. Mm-hmm. The George Best boots. So that's how much I think of George Best.
So you give him the edge?
I think you've got to give Cruyff the edge for longevity. Yeah. As far as ability and to be able to turn some nothing into something, I mean, you can't separate them. Yeah. But Cruyff did it for way longer than George did. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Cruyff.
Yeah. Obviously, all over social media today, the five-year anniversary of Cruyff's passing. Frank, who you taking? Johan Cruyff or George Best?
It's crazy, but George Best is not as known as Johan Cruyff in France. I don't know why, because when I came to England, I discovered that fantastic player that George Best was, and I had the chance to have a dinner just before he left us, and it was absolutely fantastic. What he was able to do, he was a savage player. Johan Cruyff was more elegant than George Best, but they were both effective. I would go for Johan Cruyff because he was one of my idol, one of the model of every player wanted to embrace this career. And I followed the first World Cup in 74, and he was the king of that World Cup.
Mm. All right, now we get to the real stuff. Best music taste in the locker room. You know we're close to the end when we get to the
Well, I got to say, we never had music.
You're a live jukebox around ESPN campus.
We never had music.
No, you were singing.
Yeah, everybody did their own thing. We never had a jukebox or a master blaster or anything. However, the revolution the players did, and it was always rap.
And you were right in the middle of it, singing along.
Well,
word for word.
No, I was sat in my office, and I could hear it 100 yards away. Yeah. It was blaring. Now, it was Eminem, so I actually quite liked it.
All right. I didn't know you were an Eminem fan. Look at that.
He's brilliant. Some of the other stuff was absolutely atrocious. And the language was awful.
Right. Frank, they didn't have musical technology when Stevie was playing, apparently, in the locker rooms. What did you guys listen to music on?
We did not have any music as well in the dressing room. It wasn't that time for us as well. But, you know, when you live away from home, you have the tendency to go back to what you like, and so I was listening to French music, but I didn't want to share it with my fellow teammates from me, especially from Great Britain. And I, you know, I always say to the English or the British that the let's say Great Britain music is the best music in the world, and we have the food with the Italians and the wines. So I was listening to them, and I was letting them giving the choices of the music. It's sometime we were listening to it, but nothing in special, nothing I remember.
So Frank, other than Charles Aznavour, right, who would I know from France who was a singer that music?
Jacques Brel is Belgic. No. Jacques Brel is from Belgium, but he speaks French. Edith Piaf. We had Claude François, we had Michel Sardou. It's we are talking about really special people. But I was crazy about disco at my time in the 80s and between 80s and 90s. That was really fun. You know what? There is only one radio that I'm listening in France. It's called Nostalgia because it's only about disco. And I know that Jules knows it by heart. Yeah. And you know, that's crazy. But I only listen to that.
No one would ever accuse Frank of living in the past on this show.
No, not at all.
We would never bring up.
No, he only looks forward.
Jules, you're known as a Sunday League legend. What's on your warm-up mix?
It's a good question. I mean, with the children now, I have to, you know, I'm not the DJ anymore. But there's a few stories. I mean, Frank didn't want to say it, but in the 98 World Cup, they had in the dressing room for with them through the whole competition. The Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive song that became the players' anthem and then became the whole country anthem after they won the World Cup. And earlier in the season, I was at Leicester at the training ground waiting for Yuri Tillemans to do an interview and Kasper Schmeichel. And I could hear the music from the gym that was just below the room I was in. And it was Cher, you know, the singer?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is a wrong choice. So when I saw the boys, I started taking the mic and saying like, and apparently Yuri Tillemans is a huge fan of Cher and he's the DJ at Leicester. And I can't believe that he forces his teammates to listen to Cher. I mean, this is dreadful.
Annie, do you remember Annie Lennox?
Sure.
We went on a run. We equaled an undefeated run at home in the about 88, I think it was. And every single game, when we got on the bus, Kenny Dalglish would put the tape in with Annie Lennox singing. And we listened to it every single trip from the hotel to the game.
Like a good luck thing.
Until we lost that.
How long was the run, you remember?
I think we lost the run to Everton at Goodison.
I did not mean to bring that up.
48 games or something.
All right. Well, we'll leave our run there for today. That's it for Extra Time. Thanks to Stevie, Frank, and Jules. Thanks to you for sending in your questions. We will be back for another edition of ESPN FC tomorrow. Don't miss it.